Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Okay, well, if you have ever baked some bickies and traded them for a dozen eggs laid by your neighbour's chickens, if you've ever carpooled, shared a community lawnmower, or been along to a fashion swap, then congratulations, you've caught the new global economic wave. It's called collaborative consumption. And according to social innovator and writer Rachel Botzerman, it's a global trend that's changing the way people consume and even the way they think. Rachel is the co-author of What's Mine is Yours, The Rise of Collaborative Consumption, and she's on the line now. Hello, Rachel.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. Give us a definition of this phrase, collaborative consumption.
So it's basically how technology is enabling the sharing and exchange of all kinds of assets, from cars to bikes to clothes to skills to back gardens, but in ways and on a scale that has never been possible before.
Because, I mean, we have had bartering and swapping and sharing for, you know, millennia. Yep. Nothing really new about that. But this is different simply because of the rise of the net and other technologies like that?
Well, that's the interesting thing, is that everything from smartphones to GPS to the internet is actually taking us back to really old market behaviours. So you mentioned bartering and swapping and trading. But what's happening is, whereas we used to have to do those things face-to-face, and the trades used to happen sort of one-on-one, so I had to find someone who had what I needed at the right time. We now live in this global village where we can mimic those exchanges on a massive scale.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you use the phrase peer-to-peer networks quite a bit throughout the book. Mm-hmm. In many ways, the middleman's gone.
Yeah, well, the middleman's changing. So it's true that if you look at a sector like social lending, so that's basically like eBay for money that matches lenders and borrowers anywhere in the world, a lot of the big banks and the complexities and costs of big banks are cut out. But there's still a middleman in the sense that there's a platform, there's a company that actually makes sure these trades happen and creates the right tools for them to happen.
Mm. You divide collaborative consumption into kind of three different types. I'll give you the type. You can give me some examples.
Okay.
Product, service, systems.
Mm-hmm. That's when you pay for the benefit of something or its usage without needing to own it outright. So two great examples of that are car sharing. So that can be something like GoGet, where a company owns cars and you pay to use them.
Mm-hmm.
Or it can be something like Drive My Car Rentals in Australia, where people are actually renting out their cars to their peers and their neighbours. Another great example, I've just been in Europe, and bike sharing is the fastest growing form of transportation actually now in the world. And those people, they're not on their own bikes, they're on shared bikes that are there when they want them and then they're gone when they don't.
Yeah, so what, the bike is locked up at a particular place and you can rent the key or something, can you?
Well, there's one just started in Melbourne. They're pretty sophisticated, actually. It's not a key. They're sort of racks that are distributed around 200 metres from each other, and each rack has about 20 bikes on it. But the whole thing's automated, so you can actually open the bikes from your phone. You don't have to worry about payment because that's all synced through your phone. And then when you're done, it can automatically tell how long you've had the bike. Some of the bikes, like the one in Denver, actually has a calorie counters and carbon counters built into the bike itself, so it's way better than any bike you could ever own.
So old-fashioned of me to suggest that it would have a key to open the lock.
I didn't use that word.
Okay, redistribution markets is the next type.
So redistribution markets is basically redistributing stuff from where it's not needed to someone or somewhere where it is. So it's the old adage, one man's trash is another man's treasure.
Mm-hmm.
You've basically got three types. You've got, you know, sort of eBay, which is the godfather where people sell their stuff, or Gumtree or Craigslist. You've got where people are swapping like for like. So it's called swap trading. Books is a huge category, baby clothes, makeup, toys. And then the last is gifted. So free cycle is a really good example of that, where people say, you know what, I don't want to pay for self-storage. I don't want this cluttering up my home. I'm going to give it on to someone that really needs it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The third type is collaborative lifestyles.
Yeah, because I think people often think it's just products that can be shared and exchanged and bartered and swapped, but it's actually the fastest growing category is less tangible assets, so non-product assets. So that's everything from back gardens. Last week, Landshare launched in Australia. It's a garden dating agency that basically, if you have some spare back garden space, but you don't have the time or skills to garden, it will match you with a wannabe gardener, which is pretty cool.
Brilliant idea.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's so many people who want to grow their own food, but they don't necessarily have the space, and there's so many people who have the space that don't have the time to grow their own food.
Yeah, yeah. So hang on, who gets the food at the end of the day?
You share it.
Uh-huh.
50-50. And then, you know, through to things like co-working spaces. There's a few of those that have opened in Melbourne. So, you know, there's a massive rise in independent and freelance workers where they don't necessarily want to work from home, but they don't want to work in an office, so they share an office space.
Mm-hmm.
All the way through to examples like peer-to-peer travel, which a great example is Airbnb. So you can rent out anything from a house to a spare room. There's hobbit huts in New Zealand. There's an island for rent in Fiji, and it's all rented out peer-to-peer.
How much is the island in Fiji going for per day?
$500 a night.
$500 a night for a whole island.
For a whole island.
You can spend that for a hotel in Melbourne or Sydney or something.
Yeah, you know, I always try all these things to see how they work, and I rented out my house for 4 nights over the Christmas holidays, and I made $1,600, which paid for my vacation.
Yeah. So you rented out your house just short-term rent. So obviously one of these websites that you went to, you threw up your... Because there's a lot of house swapping happening these days too. So something like that. But you rented out your place for a short term. You used that and what? Did you actually go and rent the island? You tried that?
No, I didn't.
You haven't tried that yet?
Well, the interesting thing is it's very different from a house swap because, you know, a house swap, you're in the other person's home. Whereas on Airbnb, they actually come round, they photograph your house for you so it looks beautiful on the site. And it ended up that the person who came to stay, I knew through an old professor at Harvard, which was crazy. Some people choose to do it when they go away. Other people actually enjoy the experience of hosting the guests. So you find actually a lot of empty nesters. So when their kids leave home, they rent out their spare rooms. You know, in New York, the average person's making $1,500 a month just from renting their spare room out on Airbnb.
This is Open House. You're listening to Rachel Botsman. She's the author of What's Mine Is Yours, The Rise of Collaborative Consumption. If you've kind of gotten yourself involved in some of these kind of collaborative consumption ventures, maybe you don't own a car anymore, you just use one of these car share services, or maybe you've been part of this new bike share system that's going on, or maybe you have started with this land share option that seems to be happening where welcoming somebody else to come in and garden your backyard because you can't be bothered and you're sharing the veggies. 1-300-40-2020 is my number. I'd love to know your experience and what you've done. Couch surfing is another kind of one of those, isn't it, where, you know, the whole idea is you can't afford to, you know, pay for a whole unit or something while you're away on holidays, but, you know, people will throw up their couches up onto a website and say, well, you can come and bunk in with us for a while.
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting you mentioned couch surfing because that's actually been around for 6-7 years now. But what often happens is these ideas start as a free thing, you know, so people don't charge for sleeping on a couch. And it's actually the interesting thing about couch surfing is it's a very important form of cultural exchange. So you discover that a lot of under 30s go, they really get to know locals. They have a truly cultural experience that you would never get if you stayed in a youth hostel or if you stayed in a cheap motel.
Mm. I wonder if that's because of the rise of maybe Lonely Planet guides and even the TV programs that associate with it. This whole idea, you know, get off the tourist track and actually experience the back alleys, so to speak.
Yeah, I think it is. The interesting thing I found was that the host gets a tremendous amount out of the experience. So I met a host who actually barters with the surfers. So he learnt French. Someone came to stay with him for a month.
Mm-hmm.
Someone came to stay with him and did his whole website. Another person did his taxes. So that's what's interesting is someone combining barter with couch surfing.
Mm. You mentioned that some of these services, websites or whatever, start off as free.
Mm.
How many of them generally gravitate towards being a paid service over time?
most of them. So it's generally not like couchsurfing doesn't become Airbnb. It's an entrepreneur recognizes the opportunity in the space and then builds a very viable business. I think the most phenomenal thing is a lot of these, they have very strong business models because they're based on a service transaction fee. So Airbnb takes 15% of the $1,600 that I made. Mm-hmm. It grew by 700% last year, did 800,000 transactions. You know, social lending that I mentioned, there's a huge one in the UK called Zopa. There's one just launched here called Lending Hub. You know, they take a transaction fee off the interest rates or off the borrower fee through the exchange.
Mm-hmm. I guess the sheer amount of people that are going through these sites makes it quite a lucrative business model in the end.
It does. I mean, I actually run a venture fund where we seed ventures in this space, and we really believe that we're funding the next eBays. I mean, you know, if you'd said eBay was going to be the largest retailer in the world in 1996 and that people were going to trade $2,000 worth of goods every second, people would have said, you're absolutely crazy. So I think what you're going to see is the next eBays, the next Googles, the next Facebooks actually emerge out of this space.
What's kind of catalyzed this trend right now, do you think, Rachel? Why now? Are we just getting overwhelmed with consumerism? I mean, the fact is that actually these are still consumer processes anyway, but is it why now?
It's actually a perfect storm of four key drivers. So the first is we're actually seeing a resurgence of the belief in community, the importance of community. So that's in the real and the virtual worlds. So, you know, on the left hand, you've got farmers markets. On the right hand, you've got Facebook. Sort of the age of hyper-individualism and not knowing who your neighbors are is coming to a close. Mm-hmm. The second is technology. So, you know, the smartphones are hugely important. Just we've got the technology now to connect and collaborate in ways that were never possible. And then the last two are, you know, environmental concerns and an appreciation that a consumer system that's just dependent on selling more stuff is not sustainable. And then the last is the economic crisis, which it's not about making people frugal. It's, as you mentioned, all around us, people are really questioning what makes us happy. You know, what do we want? How do we fulfill our needs? Are we better off relying on each other than big institutions?
Okay, well, before we let you go, you mentioned before that you were part of a business that seeds the new ventures in this whole area of collaborative consumption. Give us the hot tip. I mean, what might be the next thing that is just waiting for a bit of, you know, the social entrepreneurial touch in this whole kind of collaborative consumption venture?
I think a hot
yes, you space, can. It's all about collaborative consumption.
Yes,
it's all about sharing.
To be honest, I think a really hot space is the knowledge and skill sharing economy. So I think people are used to sharing sort of thoughts and daily ideas and information, and they're just actually figuring out, hang on a minute, everyone has a skill, a time, an asset that they can actually become sort of a micro-entrepreneur through. So that could be anything from, I know how to speak a language fluently and I've never done anything with it, all the way through to I'm great with kids. So I think you're going to see a rise of sort of skill sharing, errand sharing marketplaces that could be the next Facebook within the next 3 to 4 years.
Very fascinating. Well, Rachel, thanks for giving us that little hot tip. Appreciate it. Thank you. Rachel Botsman, she's the co-author of this very interesting book. It's called What's Mine is Yours, The Rise of Collaborative Consumption.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.